notes of a mind-blowing encounter with a shape-shifting creature during a creepy World War I exploration, and you won't believe what he saw. Journal of Captain Samuel Blake, October 14th, 1917. The smoke and dust never seemed to clear from these trenches. Late autumn had brought endless rain, turned everything into a quagmire of mud. My men moved like ghosts, their faces etched in fatigue and despair. I've been a soldier for 10 years, with this war, this hell, has shown me horrors I had never imagined. Private Thomas Green is one of the new recruits. He's just a boy, really, but war has a way of aging a man overnight. He's trying to keep his fear hidden, but I could see it in his eyes. The Western Front devours hope and spits out nothing but death and sorrow. The night is dark and cold. Flares occasionally light up the no man's land, casting eerie shadows over the desolation. Just when I thought I could steal a moment of silence, Sergeant Lewis approaches me. "Evening patrol is ready, sir," he said, his voice steady despite the wariness that hung to him. "Very well," I replied. "Be careful out there." The patrol set off into the night, and I watched them disappear into the gloom. Every step they took echoed in the uncertainty of whether they would return. The trenches are filled with unseen dangers, both from the enemy and from the very land itself. October 15th, 1917. Disaster struck last night. One of the men, Private Daniels, vanished during his patrol. There was no sound of struggle, no gunfire, just gone. The others found only a pool of blood and strange tracks leading away from the trench. Tracks that seemed neither wholly human nor animal. The men are on edge. Rumors spread quickly in the trenches, and always they're whispering about ghosts and demons. Private Green looks particularly shaken. He insisted that something unnatural took Daniels, but I can't afford to indulge in superstition. The enemy is real enough without adding phantoms to our worries. I must keep the men focused. Fear is a poison here, one that can spread faster than any enemy assault. I order double patrols tonight, hoping to find some trace of Daniels, or at least to reassure the men. We cannot afford to lose more to whatever it is that haunts these trenches. October 16th, 1917. Private Green came to me this morning, eyes wide with terror. He claims he saw something last night. A creature moving with unnatural speed and strength. He says it looked like a man, but distorted, almost animalistic. His arms bears deep gashes, as if from claws, lending some credence to his story. I could see the skepticism in Sergeant Lewis's eyes, but Green's wounds are real. We treated him as best as we could, but the fear in his voice is harder to heal. I want to dismiss it as a ravings of a frightened young man, but the tracks and blood from Daniel's disappearance still lingers in my mind. The men are scared. I am scared. And yet, I cannot show it. We must find out what is preying on us, whether it be the enemy or some otherworldly beast. Tonight, I will join the patrol. I need to see this for myself. October 17th, 1917. Last night, I joined the patrol. The air was thick with tension, each of us straining to hear anything beyond the usual sounds of the front. We moved carefully, our senses heightened by the fear of encountering whatever took Daniels. Private Carson, one of our more reliable men, was part of the patrol. He had always been calm under fire, but something broke him last night. He claimed to hear Private Daniels calling out from the woods beyond our lines. Carson, against his better judgment, followed the voice, convinced it was Daniels needing help. When we found Carson, he was crouched in the mud, eyes wide with terror, shaking uncontrollably. His uniform was torn and dirty, his face smeared with grime and tears. He could barely speak, and when he did, it was disjointed and frantic. "He was everywhere," Carson whispered, his voice trembling. "I heard him all around me, calling my name. I tried to find him, but it was like the woods swallowed me. I couldn't do anything but hide." We brought him back to the trench, where he continued to shake and vomit whenever he tried to explain what he had seen. Nurse Emily Carter tended to him, her face pale with worry. Whatever Carson experienced in those woods had shattered him. Sergeant Lewis and I exchanged grim looks. This was no ordinary enemy tactic. The men are more frightened than ever, and their fear is spreading like wildfire. We need answers, and we need them soon. I fear for the safety of my men and the stability of our position. The enemy we face is unlike any we had ever encountered before. Tonight, we will take extra precautions. I can only hope it will be enough. October 18th, 1917. Private Carson is still in shock. Every attempt to get him to recount his experience ends with him retching violently. Nurse Carter has done her best to calm him, but his eyes remain haunted, darting around as if expecting something to leap out from the shadows at any moment. I spoke with Green again, hoping for more clarity. His wounds are healing, but his spirit is still wounded. He insists that the creature he saw was not of this world, but I can't allow myself to be swayed by tales of monsters and spirits. The enemy is real, and that is what I must focus on. The men are terrified. I see it in their eyes, hear it in their whispers. Fear is a powerful weapon, and right now, it is being used against us. We must find a way to fight back, to reclaim some semblance of control. Tonight, I have ordered another patrol, this time deeper into the woods. We need to find out what is out there. October 19th, 1917. The patrol returned just before dawn, their faces pale and drawn. Sergeant Lewis reported back to me, his voice steady but his eyes betraying his unease.
"Sir, we encountered something out there," Lewis began. "We found the tracks deeper into the woods, as you ordered. At first it was quiet, too quiet. Then we heard it. Voices, sir. They sounded like our missing men, calling for help."
My stomach churned as he continued.
"We tried to follow the voices, but they seemed to come from all around us. Private Ellis got separated from the group. When we found him, he was huddled behind a tree, shaking. He said he saw something, a figure moving through the trees, but it wasn't right. It was distorted like a man, but twisted."
I turned to Private Ellis, who was sitting with his back against the trench wall, his eyes vacant, staring into the distance with a thousand-yard stare. He seemed to be trapped in a memory of what he had witnessed.
"Ellis," I said gently, kneeling beside him, "can you tell me what you saw out there?"
Ellis's eyes flicked to mine briefly before returning to their haunted stare. His voice was low and trembling.
It was like a man, but not. Its arms and legs moved all wrong, like they were broken. And its face, it looked like a man, but it wasn't. It was like it was wearing someone else's skin. I saw it. I saw it tear into Johnson. There was so much blood, Captain. It just ripped him apart. I couldn't even do anything. I just hid.
He fell silent,
his body trembling. Nurse Carter was nearby, ready to offer comforts, but there was little anyone could do to erase the horror from his mind. I looked back at Lewis, who shook his head. "We wanted to investigate further, sir, but Ellis was too terrified. We thought it best to return before we lost anyone else." My mind raced, trying to make sense of what I had just heard. This was no ordinary enemy tactic. Something far more sinister was at play. Something designed to instill the deepest kind of fear. I nodded, trying to suppress the unease gnawing at my insides. "We'll figure it out, Lewis. We have to. For now, no more patrols until we could determine what is taking our men. Double the guards and keep everyone alert. We can't let fear get the better of us." As Lewis left to carry out my orders, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were facing something far beyond the ordinary tactics of war. But until I had proof, I had to remain focused on keeping my men safe and maintaining order. October 20th, 1917. Last night, I found sleep impossible. The events of the past few days have weighed heavily on my mind, and the fear that had gripped my men had found its way into my own thoughts. As I laid on my cot, staring up at the makeshift ceiling of the trench, I could have sworn I heard a voice. Mark's voice. Mark was my best friend. We grew up together, enlisted together, and fought side by side through countless battles. He was the kind of friend that you could rely on in any situation. We were more than just friends. We were brothers in arms. But then came that day on the battlefield. We were advancing, pushing through enemy lines, when a shell exploded nearby. Mark was hit. I watched helplessly as he bled out into the mud, his eyes searching for mine as the life drained from him. That moment has haunted me ever since. Hearing his voice last night brought all those memories flooding back. At first, I thought it was my mind playing tricks on me, a cruel trick of exhaustion. But the voice was so clear, calling my name, pleading for help. I couldn't ignore it. I got up and followed the sound, moving carefully through the dark trench. The closer I got, the farther away the voice seemed to be. It was as if Mark was just out of reach, always one step ahead. I followed the voice until I reached the end of the trench, where it curved around a corner. That's when I saw them. A pair of eyes peeking at me from the darkness at the end of the trench. They were unlike any eyes I had ever seen, shining with a malevolent intelligence. The moment I noticed them, they darted away, disappearing around the corner. I rushed to the spot, my heart pounding in my chest. When I arrived, there was nothing there except a pair of bare footprints in the mud. One foot was noticeably smaller than the other, an odd detail that only added to the growing sense of unease. I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep after that. I woke up two of the sleeping soldiers, ordered them to keep watch through the night. They looked at me with wide, fearful eyes, but nodded in understanding. As I returned to my cot, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being watched, hunted even. This wasn't just some enemy tactic. There was something else out there, something playing with us, feeding on our fears. Sleep finally came, but it was restless and filled with nightmares. I can't let this go on. We need to find out what is out there and stop it before it takes any more of my men. October 21st, 1917. Dark clouds have gathered above us, and the heavens had opened up with a relentless downpour. The rain has turned the trenches into rivers of mud and filth, making every step a battle against the earth itself. The cold bites through our uniforms and the dampness seeps into our bones, but the physical discomfort is nothing compared to the lingering dread from last night. I can't shake the feeling of those eyes watching me, the memory of hearing Mark's voice, of following it into the darkness has left me rattled. Today I found myself slipping up on duties, small, critical tasks that required my full attention. I miscounted our rations, nearly sending out an inaccurate supply request. I gave contradictory orders during a drill, confusing the men and causing unnecessary tension. My mind is not where it needs to be, and it's affecting my ability to lead. All day, I've gone back and forth on whether or not to report last night's incident to my supervisors. If I tell them what I saw, what I heard, they might think I've gone mad from the stress of war. And maybe I have. But if this is something real, something that could jeopardize the safety of my men, they need to know. In the end, I decided to keep it to myself for now. The last thing we need is more uncertainty. Today has been a brutal reminder of the violence we face daily. The trenches are flooded, making movement almost impossible. Every step feels like wading through quicksand, the mud sucking at our boots. The constant rain has turned the walls of the trench into slick, treacherous surfaces that threaten to collapse at any moment. And through it all, the enemy's artillery has been relentless, shells exploding around us, sending torrents of mud and shrapnel into the air. The firefights today were more intense than usual. The enemy seemed determined to break through our lines, and we fought tooth and nail to hold them back. The sound of gunfire and explosions were deafening, drowning out the cries of the wounded and the commands shouted across the trench. The rain mixed with blood, creating a gruesome soup that covered everything. Visibility was low, and the constant noise made it impossible to think clearly. Despite the chaos and violence, my mind kept drifting back to last night. The image of those eyes, the sound of Mark's voice, they haunted me even in the midst of battle. Every shadow seemed to hold a hidden threat, every sound an echo of the past. As night falls, I find myself reflecting on that day. Despite the intense combat, the fear of death, and the physical exhaustion, today feels like a respite compared to the past few days. The reports of that thing, the creature, had left a mark on all of us. Even in the face of brutal warfare, there's something uniquely terrifying about an unseen predator lurking in the dark, preying on our fears. Today was violent, yes, but it was a familiar kind of violence, the kind we can understand, fight against. The terror of the unknown, of a creature that defies explanation, is far worse. I could see it in the eyes of my men. They'd rather face the enemy's bullets than the horror that stalks us in the night. Tomorrow, we'll continue our fight, but the shadow of last night's encounter will linger. I must stay vigilant, for my sake and for the sake of my men. We cannot afford to let our fear consume us. October 22nd, 1917. This morning, I woke up to an unusual sight. The sun was shining. Normally, I'd awakened well before sunrise, roused by the sound of gunfire or my men moving about the trench. Today, however, there was an eerie silence. I slowly sat up, the quiet unsettling me. I walked through the trench, careful not to make a noise, but something felt wrong. It took a few moments, but I realized what it was. There was no one else here. I began calling for my men, my voice echoing down the empty trench. In the distance, I could hear faint voices, and I started to follow them. But then I stopped, a chill running down my spine as I remembered the night I had tried to follow Mark's voice. The creature had used his voice to lure me away, paralyzed by fear and uncertainty. I found a hole dug into the side of the trench and hid, hoping to stay out of sight. As I crouched in the hole, the voices grew closer and closer. At one point, I felt a knot in my throat, and I had to muffle a cry to avoid alerting the creature.
Then, to my immense relief, I saw a small group of 5 soldiers and Nurse Carter walk past without noticing me. Noticing it wasn't the creature, I emerged from my hiding place. The group embraced me, relief evident in their faces. I asked what was happening, and they explained that they all had woken up alone. Everyone around them had gone missing. They found each other and grouped up, hoping to find more survivors. As they spoke, I realized I hadn't heard a gunshot or artillery since waking up. The silence was unnerving. We huddled together, trying to make sense of our situation. 2 soldiers, Private Harris and Corporal Reed, began arguing, their fear and frustration boiling over.
"Enough,"
I shouted, stepping between them. "We need to keep it together. We won't be able to rationalize this. Our focus now is survival." I laid out a plan. We would try to go around no man's land through the forest, hoping to find the rest of our men. As we made our way into the forest, the sky darkened. The rain began to pour harder than it had in days. We searched for hours but found no one. The rain was relentless, soaking us to the bone and making progress difficult. As night fell, we decided to return to the trenches. When we arrived, we found the trenches flooded more than ever before, making them uninhabitable. We had no choice but to camp in the forest. None of us got much sleep. Weird shadows played tricks in our minds, and strange sounds kept us on edge all night. The forest seemed to come alive with a malevolent presence, the shapes and noises haunting us as we tried the rest. We are exhausted and on the brink of despair, but we must keep going. We have to find our men, or at the very least, survive whatever this is that had taken hold of our lives. October 23rd, 1917. The rain finally let up this morning, giving us a brief respite from the relentless downpour. We decided to move through the forest in hopes of finding our missing men. The forest was dense and eerie, the shadows playing tricks on our eyes, but we pressed on, determined to uncover the truth behind the disappearances. After several hours of trudging through the muck and underbrush, we stumbled upon what appeared to be an abandoned, empty camp. The discovery was unsettling. The camp was eerily silent, with no signs of life. Tattered tents flapped in the wind, and the ground was littered with discarded equipment and provisions. It was clear that the camp had been left in a hurry. We cautiously entered the camp, weapons at the ready. The smell of decay and gunpowder lingered in the air. We found evidence of a struggle, bloodstains, torn uniforms, and the same strange footprints we had seen before, one foot noticeably smaller than the other. It became evident that whatever was hunting us was also preying on the enemy. Corporal Reed pointed out a makeshift command post at the center of the camp. Inside, we found maps, plans, and hastily written notes. The enemy had been tracking the creature as well, documenting sightings and attacks. They called it Der Walgager, the forest hunter. Their notes described it as a creature that could mimic human voices to lure its prey and move with unnatural speed and agility. As we shifted through the enemy's reports, we heard a noise behind us. We spun around, weapons drawn, to find an old man standing at the edge of the camp. He was dressed in simple, weather-worn clothing, his face lined with age and experience. He raised his hands in a gesture of peace. "Who are you?" I demanded, my voice steady despite the tension. The old man introduced himself as Claus, a local villager who had lived in these woods his entire life. He spoke with a thick accent, his eyes filled with a mixture of fear and resignation.
"I know what you are facing," Claus said. "It's not of this world. It is an ancient evil, a predator that has haunted these woods for centuries."
We listened intently as Claus recounted the folklore of the creature. According to him,
It first appeared around the time of the discovery of the New World. The creature was said to have been born from the bloodshed and turmoil of those times, a manifestation of human fear and violence.
It hunted people in the woods between Germany and France, Claus explained. For generations, the local villagers avoided these forests, passed down stories of the creatures from parent to child. They called it Der Waldgar. It mimicked human voices, lures its prey into the depths of the forest. Its limbs move in unnatural, grotesque ways. Its face looks almost human, but there is something terribly wrong with it, as if it was wearing the skin of a person.
Klaus's eyes darkened as he continued.
When the war came, it drove people back into the forests that had long been abandoned. The creature saw this as a return of its prey. It is cunning and ruthless, capable of ripping a man apart with its claws. It feeds on fear, growing stronger with each victim it claims.
The sun was beginning to set as Claude finished his tale. He offered a shelter at his home for the night, a small cabin deeper into the woods. Exhausted and weary, we accepted his offer, hoping for a brief moment of safety and rest. Claus's cabin was simple but sturdy, a refuge from the horrors outside. For the first time in days, we felt a semblance of peace. Claus provided us with warm food and dry clothes, and as night fell, we settled into the comfort of his home. That night, I slept deeply, free from the nightmares that had plagued me. The sense of safety and the warmth of the fire provided a rare comfort. For a few precious hours, we were able to forget the terror that stalked us. As I write this, the fire crackles softly, and my men sleep soundly around me. Claus's words echoed in my mind, a grim reminder of the ancient evil we face. Tomorrow, we will continue our search for our missing comrades, armed with new knowledge and a renewed sense of purpose. But for now, we rest, gathering our strength for the battles ahead. This night of peace, though fleeting, had given me hope. We will face the forest hunter together, and we will find a way to survive. October 24th, 1917. The morning light brought little comfort after the nightmare we endured last night. As I am sitting here writing, the events of the previous night replayed in my mind, vivid and horrifying. The creature found us. It attacked Claus's cabin, shattering the brief sanctuary we had hoped for. We had settled in for the night, exhausted but grateful for a moment of respite. The fire crackled softly, and the warmth of the cabin lulled us into a sense of security. I should have known better. I was jolted awake by the sound that froze my blood, a guttural growl followed by the splintering of wood. The cabin shuddered as something massive struck its walls. My heart pounded in my chest as I reached for my rifle, the sudden chaos shattering the brief peace we had found. The creature had found us. The men scrambled to their feet, confusion and fear in their eyes. The creature's growls grew louder, more menacing, as it tore through the wooden walls of the cabin. Claus's face was pale, his eyes wide with terror. Had he seen this before and knew what was coming? "Get ready," I shouted, trying to keep my voice steady. "Defend yourselves." The next moment, the creature bursted through the wall, sending splinters flying. It was massive, its limbs grotesquely elongated, moving with a sickening fluidity that defied nature. Its face, twisted into a hideous parody of a human visage, was covered in what looked like patches of stretched-out skin. The eyes, those same malevolent eyes I had seen in the trench, glinted with a predatory intelligence. Private Harris was the first to fire, his shot going wide in his panic. The creature moved with impossible speed, closing the distance in an instant. Its claws slashed through the air, catching Harris in the chest and tearing through the flesh and bone. Blood sprayed across the room as Harris fell, his scream cut short. We opened fire, the sound of gunshots deafening in the enclosed space. The bullets seemed to have little effect, merely slowing the creature down. It turned its attention to Corporal Reed, its jaws opening to reveal rows of jagged teeth. With a horrific snap, it clamped down on Reed's arm, tearing it clean off. Reed's scream filled the cabin, mingling with the creature's growls.
"Fall back!"
I yelled, trying to create some distance.
"Get out of the cabin!"
Nurse Carter grabbed Reed, dragging him towards the door despite his agonized cries. The rest of us continued the fire, trying to cover their retreat. The creature lunged at Claus, who was frantically chanting something in a language I didn't understand. Its claws raked across his back, blood soaking his shirt. I threw myself between Claus and the creature, firing point blank into its face. It recoiled, momentarily stunned, giving us a chance to escape. We stumbled out of the cabin into the cold night air, Reed's blood leaving a trail behind us. The creature followed, emerging from the ruined wall like a nightmare given form. It stood at the hole it created in the wall, its twisted limbs casting long shadows in the moonlight. For a moment, it seemed to savor our fear, its eyes locked onto mine. We ran, driven by pure terror. Behind us, the creature let out a bone-chilling roar, the sound reverberating through the trees. We didn't stop until we reached the edge of the forest, the adrenaline finally giving way to exhaustion. I looked around at my men. Harris was dead, Reed was gravely injured, and Claus was barely standing. Nurse Carter was doing her best to help Reed's bleeding, her hands covered in his blood.
"What do we do now, Captain?"
Private Ellis asked, his voice shaking. I took a deep breath, trying to steady myself.
"We survive," I said. "We find a way to kill that thing, or it will kill us all."
As we regrouped, the reality of our situation sank in. The creature was relentless, a force of nature that could not be stopped by ordinary means. But we had no choice. We had to find a way to fight back, or we would become just another group of victims in its long history of terror. We set up a makeshift camp so the men could rest and the nurse could tend to the wounded. We attempted to get some sleep, but everyone was too on edge to even think about sleep. October 25th, 1917. The events of last night left us shaken, but not broken. As dawn broke, Claus, despite his injuries, insisted we search his cabin for anything that might help us understand and defeat the creature. While the others tended to Reed, I helped Claus rummage through his belongings. The cabin was in shambles, but Claus's determination was unwavering. In the back of a dusty old chest, we found a tattered journal. Claus's eyes lit up with recognition.
"This belonged to my grandfather," he explained. "He wrote about the creature, about Del Walgager."
We gathered around as Claus carefully turned the fragile pages. The journal detailed encounters with the creature over centuries, each entry more terrifying than the last. But there, near the end, we found something hopeful. A description of the creature's weakness.
"The creature fears fire," Claus read aloud. "It can be driven back and harmed by flames. Fire is its only true weakness."
Hope stirred within us. We had a way to fight back. I immediately ordered the men to search for anything that could be used to create torches. Claus produced an old oil lamp and some kerosene, and we began the prepare. By late afternoon, we were as ready as we would be. The plan was simple but dangerous. Lure the creature into the open and attack with fire. We knew the risks, but there was no other option. This was our best chance to end the nightmare. As night fell, we set our trap. Claus and I would act as bait,
drawing the creature out while the others waited in ambush with torches and improvised Molotov cocktails. The air was thick with tension, every rustle of leaves sending shivers down our spines. The forest was eerily silent, as if it, too, was holding its breath. October 26, 1917. The creature emerged from the shadows, its twisted form illuminated by the flickering flames of our torches, its eyes locked onto us, filled with malice and hunger. We stood our ground, hearts pounding, waiting for the right moment.
Claws, now!
I shouted as the creature came at us. Claws and I dodged to the sides, the creature crashing into the clearing. The others sprang from their hiding places, brandishing their flaming torches. The creature roared, its claws slashing through the air, but our determination held strong. Private Ellis was the first to strike, swinging his torch and catching the creature's side. It howled in pain, the flames licking at its skin. Nurse Carter, wielding another torch, aimed for its face, driving it back. The creature recoiled, clearly terrified of the flame.
"Keep it back!"
I yelled, thrusting my own torch forward. The creature writhed and snarled, its movements frantic and disjointed. It seemed to grow weaker as the flames continued to burn, the flames searing its flesh. Claws moved in with the oil lamp, smashing it at the creature's feet and engulfing it into a burst of flames. The creature let out a final ear-splitting scream as it collapsed to the ground, writhing in agony. We watched, daring to breathe, as the fire consumed it. The creature's body convulsed, then stilled, the malevolent light in its eyes fading to darkness. We stood there, panting and bloodied, hardly daring to believe it was over. We had done it. We had defeated the forest hunter. The relief was overwhelming. We tended to our wounds and gathered around the fire, the victory tempered by the loss of our comrades. Harrison Reed's sacrifice will not be in vain. We had faced the nightmare and emerged victorious. As I write this, the first light of dawn is breaking through the trees. We will return to our lines and report what had happened. The forest may still hold its secrets, but the creature that haunted it is no more. For the first time in days, I feel a sense of hope. We survived, and we will continue to fight. The war is far from over, but we had proven that even in the darkest of times, courage and determination can overcome the greatest of evils.